everybody, for tuning into The Sure Thing. Today, it is October 25th. Warren and Ryan here with you. On today's show, we'll talk about the football weekend. There's some stats from the NFL that is pretty alarming about the margin of victory for this weekend's game. So we'll talk about that, talk about college, and talk a little about the F1 race I was at this weekend and a bunch of other stuff that is out there. Baseball, you got the World Series set. Things along that. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and under the podcast section of the iHeartRadio app. Ryan, how's it going? How's your trip to Phoenix?
It was great, man. Good to get away. Good to get back home, see some familiar faces, you know, see some familiar places that I haven't been in a while. Yeah, it was good stuff. Good to kind of get away. We left the boy behind, so it was just mom and dad for the weekend. So it was good stuff.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Was it hot? What was the weather like?
No, it was actually really, really nice. It was like, it got up to 90, I think, on Thursday while we were there. But all the other days, it was like low 80. So it was beautiful. We played golf on Saturday, like in the afternoon, like started where we teed off at about 11. And it was beautiful the whole way through. Like I said, it was about 80, 82. Nice little breeze going. Weather could not have been better.
Yeah, I think our show jinxed the fall for Texas.
Yeah, I keep doing that. And I got another jinx that I'm working on right now. We'll talk about that later in the show. But so right now I totally agree. I think we did jinx the weather, and that's not the only thing we're jinxing right now, or at least one of us on this show.
The jinx was a big problem for someone that spent a lot of time outside this weekend. As I said on Thursday, I was, or Wednesday, whenever we recorded last week, I was going to the F1 race this weekend in Austin. First time ever been to an F1 race. As even before I started watching Drive to Survive and then really getting into F1, like when I was down at Texas State, I was like, man, this would be cool to go to. Or my dad and I were like, man, this is cool. Like, we want to see this because it'd be a cool event to go to. Then finally this year, we decided to go. And I'll tell you what, seeing the cars and like, we were there Saturday and Sunday. We didn't go Friday. Saturday, they have practice, which we saw, which was cool just to see the cars going around the track. Qualifying was cool. Don't know I would want to go to qualifying again. Like, qualifying was cool, but I think you see more on TV, even though you have a monitor. The race was awesome. Where we were sitting was in turn 19, so we saw them come out of turn 18 where there could be some overtaking into turn 19. A couple guys had the back ends getting a little loose, went a little wide, and then we saw them go into the pits or turn into turn 20, so our seats were great. The actual, like, watching when the cars were on the track was amazing. How fast they go. I mean, going into these corners, they just have the corner, no fear at all. Obviously, it's pretty amazing. And you can, like, if someone locked up the brakes, or you could, you know how they always talk about during the race, oh, the tires are hot.
Yeah.
You could figure out whose tires were hot when they drove by, because you could smell the rubber going by sometimes. Like, if they probably got on the brakes a little too hot, like, you, not every driver you could smell or every car you could smell the rubber. But if someone, like, I don't think anyone really locked up going in that corner, but some guys, you could smell the rubber on the tires. You're like, wow, this is it. And they would get on the curbs and you would hear it, like the rumble strips. And the Red Bull was the only car we saw sparks fly off of. But, like, the actual racing and seeing the cars around the track was pretty amazing. And it wasn't, like, as loud as I expected it to be. I will say that I thought Friday and Saturday was louder when they were doing hot laps and the engines seemed like they were backfiring or whatever. But the race, to me, was, even though more cars were in succession, I didn't think it was as loud as I thought it was going to be. But it was pretty amazing to see the cars on the track.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, cars flying around that fast. It's not something you see every day. And great, great win by the man, the myth, the legend that is Max Verstappen. I didn't get to see any of the race, but I saw that he did win. We were flying the whole time the race was going on. But no, I'm sure that was a pretty cool experience. I actually, a couple of my cousins that live down in Austin that are also big F1 fans, they're they're Daniel Ricciardo fans, so they were down there sporting Ferrari?
No, he's McLaren.
McLaren, yeah. So they're sporting McLaren gear down there. But it looked like a pretty neat experience.
Yeah, it was also our seats we could see. So turn one's up like a 40-foot hill. It's up a huge hill. So from our seats we could see cars coming out of the pit lane and doing the turn one. So we could see that. So that was another cool thing. I would assume almost every seat could probably see turn one because it's the highest spot on the track. But Lewis got Max on the start. You got to go watch the replay of the start. Max tried to drive Lewis right off the track, or he squeezed him as far left as he can, and it didn't work out. And Lewis got the pass out there. But it was, so they said there were 400,000 people there over the entire weekend, which is a ton of people, up from 360,000. There were 150,000 there yesterday for the race, and I think there were 110,000 on Friday and Saturday. Like if you are interested, if people out there are interested in going, I would say pay the extra money for a legitimate seat, like in the sections in turn one, turn six, 11, I think 12, 15 and 18 or 19. Do not do general admission, because those people are lined up at 5 a.m, 6 a.m. ready to go in turn one to get their spot, and you're just there all day having to walk around or whatever, or just sit there in your chair. Like, do not, unless you want to do that. But if you don't want to do that and you don't want to have to worry about getting a seat, like Sunday, we got there, the race started at 2. We got there in the gates probably at 11:30, so still 11:15, still 2.5 hours. That hill on turn one was packed from like 9 a.m. on. I went to walk around, like the S-curve section was slammed. Every general admission spot by 7 o'clock or by 11 o'clock when I was walking around was just like jam-packed. And it was unbelievable. So I would say pay the extra money for a seat. We had seats in turn 19. And then also pay, I was talking to you off there that I paid a lot for parking on a secondary site, the same site. I think the parking lot was $150. I will say this. I would pay even more money to park in a better lot. We didn't have any issues getting out of there. It took like 45 minutes to get out of there on Sunday, and about the same on Saturday, maybe even a little bit longer, but anything, it was less than an hour. But people in the same lot we were in were stuck in the lot for 2.5 hours. The whole logistical aspect of going to COTA, I think, is going to deter a lot of people from going back to the race. Now, new people will want to go in, but like the fan experience, like not having enough beer, water stations, lines being 50 minutes delays, like 50 minute waits, parking being a total nightmare. Buses, they had 100 shuttle buses just not show up on Saturday because of contract dispute. And then I guess people had to walk 3 miles to lot Q yesterday after the race because the drivers for that park and ride shuttle just left because they were so tired of whatever they were doing, or there was no direction. So they just got up and left. So people were stranded and had to walk 3 miles to their car. Like the logisticals and fan experience, the logistics were, it was pretty bad. And I was trying to put on a good face, like be like, okay, this is just a situation, like take the punches. But it was, from a fan experience, it was a pretty, pretty poor event. I would say one of the worst fan experiences I've ever been to. And I've been to a lot of events. I've been very lucky to go to a lot of events, but this was one of the worst fan experience I've ever been to. And I'm not one to be like criticizing fan experiences, but this was one of the worst I've ever been to. Now, racing wise, I've only been to an IndyCar race in Texas, which wasn't very crowded, and an IndyCar race in Cleveland. I'm not even comparing it to that, but just other games, golf tournaments I've been to before. Like, this was one of the worst fan experiences that I've had.
Now, do you think that's on F1, or do you think it's just kind of the infrastructure of how it was put together, or like who do you think deserves?
Oh, it's on Circuit of the Americas. It's on the track, because the F1 comes in and they have the race there, but like F1 isn't planning parking. The Circuit of the Americas is planning park. Like, you're buying parking through the Circuit of the Americas. You're not buying parking through Formula One. So it's the Circuit of the Americas. And you've been to Austin. You've never been to, have you been to COTA or not?
No, I have not.
Have you driven by it at all or not?
I have no idea. I don't think so.
Okay. So it's on 130, which is the toll road.
Right.
In the middle.
Then you know what? Then, you know, 130. So that's on the east side of Austin.
Yeah.
Then you know what? I don't think I have. Yeah. Okay. I don't think I have.
So they've got the big observation tower, or whatever, too. If you drive by, you'll see it. It's not hard to miss. It's right off the road. I don't get when they built this track off of 130 in the middle of nowhere, why they didn't do something like, hey, Talladega. I've driven by Talladega. It's right off the highway in Alabama. They have like 8 lanes of traffic, 4 in both ways. Why here in little Elroy, Texas, they couldn't maybe, you know, make the road not a 3-lane road, one and then a middle lane so you could do it. Why not? You got two roads going into the track, 2 main roads off of 130 going into the track. Why don't you don't build about a 6-lane road? There's nothing there. It's just land. Or a 4 or 5-lane road, so it's not just so congested from people having disasters leaving. Like, the planning on this was horrible, and they knew they were expecting 360,000 people there this weekend, so they hit 400,000 over than what they thought. Obviously, the Netflix show has a huge reason why a ton of people wanted to go. It's the only U.S. race this year. There's one in Miami next year. And like, the atmosphere and everything was great. All the scenes, the fans and everything, it was amazing. But just how they didn't have better planning going into this. When you've had a race for 2 years and the tickets were on sale, I think in like March for this, March or April, like they've been on sale for a while and they sold out immediately. Like, you knew what you were getting yourself into. I just don't understand how they didn't have better planning for such an event. It was mind boggling to me. I truly don't understand.
Yeah, that's it's not, like you said, it's not, you know, we've been to tons and tons of events. You don't ever like really focus on the fan experience, but that sounds like it was rather miserable. And you know, when you brought up parking, people always think the closer you are to your venue, the better. No. The strategy is always, how can I get out the quickest? Because the closer you are, usually the longer you are to get out after the event's over. But having to walk a couple miles, that's not going to be fun, especially like you said, if it was, the weather was not the best.
It was just hot.
A little hot.
It was
exactly,
just
yeah.
Super hot, and like places ran out of water.
Yeah, that's
like
crazy.
How are you running out of water?
Crazy. Yeah, I guess they. I mean, I guarantee you, next year will probably be a little bit better as far as, you know, the water, beer, whatever. You know, I don't know if they were.
They didn't run out of beer. I'll tell you that.
I don't know if they're ready for 500,000 people to be walking through those doors, but I can guarantee next year they will be.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. And look, I say this and I would go back next year in a heartbeat. I'm not saying as I just trashed the fan experience, I'd go do it again. And I go back again in a second, because just seeing the races, and they had like a women's series race, W series, that you could watch. You could see F4 drivers, like the F4 race was out there. That was cool to see. Since we were there early, we got to see that. That was cool. But no, so the strategy was, we literally, for the race, Max and Lewis, we were like, all right, if you know F1, there's 10-15 seconds worth of gap. We're like, if Lewis or Max, whoever's winning, is up by more than 10-15 seconds and it doesn't look like they're going to catch them, we're going to leave early with like 3 laps to go just to beat the traffic. We don't care, because we drove back to Dallas last night. Well, Lewis pits. They were 2 stops strategies, and Lewis, when he pitted, they were like, hey, he's going to be in target range within like 4 laps to go. What do you know? 4 laps to go, he's under 2 seconds from Max, And seeing that deficit narrow was pretty amazing and pretty cool to see. Like every lap, Lewis gets closer, but then Max held him off. So we stayed till the end. But right as they made that turn down turn 20, we were out of there walking to the car and got out of there pretty quickly. But people that stayed and walk on the track, like, go search Coda on Twitter or go look at the replies to some of the tweets. It's not, there are not a lot of happy people out there. I did do the, they had a pit stop challenge. I don't know if you saw my Insta post, but I did the pit stop challenge. I was the wheel gun guy. I got to do that. So that was pretty cool. That wheel gun's very heavy, heavier than I thought. And I also thought the lug nut would stay like automatically attached to the tire. And the first time I did it, the thing went flying off and I had to go like dive and save it before it went off the edge. But they had a F1 simulator thing. Like, they had some fun stuff you could do. But the people watching too, I want to say this, the people watching was incredible to see. And the amount of people, I'm not surprised about this, but people decked out in the like team t-shirts, Red Bull, like with all the sponsors on it, Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, obviously those were the big four, ton of Red Bull, ton of McLaren, was incredible. And like, I've got a couple, like, I don't want to, they're not a fit. It's like T-shirts made by other companies, F1. Like, I wore a Max Verstappen helmet shirt. Then I got a McLaren shirt that I wore of one of their car designs from Monaco. Like, you see, like, non-official gear at, like, Cowboys game, Rangers game. Like, all just T-shirt companies making their own stuff. You, F1, let me tell you, you don't see any of that. It's all... whatever the race team sells, they're buying it. And it was pretty unbelievable that no one had any. There maybe were a couple off company t-shirts, but everything was like team issued and stuff like that. It was pretty crazy.
No bootleggers, huh?
No. Everything was straight. I mean, Mercedes was selling hats for $70 on there, and Ferrari hats were like 50-60 bucks. Same thing with Red Bull. It was, if you wanted a hat, it was pricey. Now I went to the F1 outlet store, got myself a nice little 2020 Dutch Grand Prix shirt. The cool thing about the Dutch Grand Prix in 2020, it never happened. So when there's a shirt from a race, from an event that didn't happen, I think that's an auto buy, and that's what I did.
Nice. So there was no I don't know, whenever you go to the Cowboys games, there's always the guy that's selling the "bitch, I'm a cowboy" shirt.
Yeah, none of that.
No, "bitch, I'm a Verstappen."
No, none of that. I did tweet out there was a guy wearing a Seattle Seahawks Verstappen jersey, which I thought was hilarious.
That's a nice little mashup.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Deuce McAllister jersey. I don't know if you saw that. I was trying to take pictures of as many NFL jerseys as I could get out there, or other jerseys out there. It's kind of hard though sometimes in the crowd to grab those. So I got as many as I could. Saturday, I was so mad. This guy was wearing an Ed McCaffrey Broncos jersey, which was thinking my dad and I were talking like, what? And the guy with wearing the Deuce McAllister jersey yesterday, he had to be in his late 50s. What makes you think that, you know, hey, I'm going to an F1 race. I got this whole closet full of clothes, probably jerseys. I'm going to wear my Deuce McAllister Saints jersey. Like, I just don't get that.
Yeah, no, that's you got to go deep in the closet for that one, right?
Yeah, just like what's going through your mind to wear a Deuce McAllister jersey to an F1 race? Look, there were a ton of Rodgers jerseys, a ton of Mahomes, Kelsey, whatever. I just want to know that guy's thinking of like, hey, I'm rocking a Deuce McAllister jersey today.
Was that on Sunday?
Yeah, yesterday. Yeah.
Okay, so that makes a little bit more sense, you know, because when we're walking through the airport, everybody.
But the Saints play tonight.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's Sunday. You wear your football gear on Sunday. I get it. Because like I said, when we were walking through the airport, both in Phoenix and when we landed, I mean, everybody's wearing their, you know, all their different NFL garb.
Yeah.
You know, tons of actually. The gate that we landed at here in Dallas, dude was rocking a Sean Taylor jersey and he's on the mic talking. And as he's talking, I walk by, you know, we're walking out of the gate and I, you know, give him a hail to the Redskins. He stops what he's saying in the middle, points at me and kind of, you know, like gives me a little head nod or whatever, and then gets back to what he was saying. So that was kind of funny. But
Jackson Mahomes dancing on his jersey.
It was nuts, thankfully. Okay. But cheap shot there, but no.
That's not a cheap shot at you.
No, I know. Jackson Mahomes, great guy. But no, that's like I said, the Ed McCaffrey, that's a wild one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. I saw a Dirk, old throwback Dirk, and there was a Dennis Rodman one as well. But that was obviously then there were a bunch of like Max jerseys and all that. I was just going off sport. And then one other thing, one of the coolest things was seeing was watching the TV helicopter with the camera on it, seeing how that went throughout the race, how that maneuvered through practice, how that maneuvered through qualifying, how it would kind of sit over turn one and follow them down the hill through the S's, or it would come around the observation, and just how that would maneuver and how the producers worked that throughout the race or qualifying or the practice. I thought that was very cool to watch. That was a fun little thing to see. No, it was a good time. And now I want to go to an abroad race, a race abroad, just to see what the difference in atmosphere was. But there are a lot of Euros. There are a lot of foreigners at this race. There were a ton of people from them, but there are a lot of foreigners at this one. So it was a good time there in Austin at the F1. And now we got Max has a 12-point lead on Lewis in the championship. So we got a proper championship fight on our hands. Did you see the clip of when the guy tried to interview Megan Thee Stallion on the grid before the race?
No, I missed that.
So Martin, you know how they always have the grid before or whatever? Yeah. And the guy goes walking up and down. I guess the stars were out for the race, and Megan Thee Stallion was there, and Martin Brundle goes, "Hey, Megan, do you have a rap about Formula One you can do or something?" Which is funny or whatever. And then she kind of got a kick out of it. But then her team was like, no, she's not talking, so you can't talk to her. And he goes, "All right, well, Daniel Ricciardo over here or whatever." But that was a pretty funny clip. And Danny Ricciardo in the driver parade wore a Texas number 3 basketball jersey. He had a cowboy hat on, and he does this cowboy accent or whatever. It's pretty funny. And so he was on full display this weekend. But all right, enough F1 football. We'll start in the NFL. What do you think the biggest – I hand up, as I said, I was F1. I did not see a single – did not see a single down of football yesterday. So I tried to watch some highlights or whatever this morning, but yesterday did not watch a single down of football. What is the bigger story, that the Bengals beat the Ravens or that the Chiefs lost to the Titans?
Probably the way the Chiefs lost to the Titans is probably more of a story because, I mean, at halftime it was like 24-0, something like that. It was not looking good. Mahomes obviously goes out late in the game. Takes a tough hit. So I'd say that's probably the bigger story. I think another big story, not necessarily the Bengals being good, but a couple weeks ago when you asked me why I thought the Bengals were good, and I'll let the record speak for itself.
They're good. They're playing well right now.
Yeah, I know. I know they are. And I saw it from the jump. I was on them from the jump. I knew Joe Burrow, he was going to hang tough. He's going to put his nuts on the table. Jamar Chase, good. Joe Mixon, good. Yeah, that offensive line can be a little shaky. Who's that? Their defender, Erickson, Hendrickson. He's been absolutely on a tear. Must be nice to have a defensive end that gets sacks and rushes the quarterback into hurrying up passes. But Bengals played really, really well. I don't think that says anything about the Ravens.
I think it does.
Nah, I mean, look at their running game. Devontae Freeman, Latavius Murray was out. Le'Veon Bell. Like, you need. I know it's pass happy league. But as good as Lamar Jackson has gotten, as far as passing, he's gotten a much better. They still need that run game, and not Lamar Jackson running the ball. Like, they need a supportive running game with the running backs, and they're not able to get that right now. And so I think that's going to make things tough. That defense still is good. It's obviously not the Ravens defense we've come to know and love, but I think it was a better win for the Bengals than it was a bad loss for the Ravens.
Okay, so the Ravens this year had a miracle comeback against the Chiefs, hit a 66-yarder at the buzzer against the Lions when it should have been a 5-yard penalty because of a delay of game that should have never been happened. They win 19-17. They have a miracle comeback against the Colts. They've had two dominating wins this year against the Broncos and the Chargers. And the Chargers were off an emotional win against the Browns going to the East Coast, and the Broncos haven't beat a team that has had a win yet when they've played them. So the Ravens are I think they're a flawed team, and their record, they're 5-2 right now. They could easily be 2-5 or 3-4. Like I think their record shows more that they have issues that have been masked by Lamar Jackson. And look, he can pull you out of those spots, but they've had some miracle wins this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're 100% right when you say they're a flawed team, because they don't have a running game. They lost their top three running backs to injury. And now the running backs they have, they have running for them aren't doing terrible. They're getting, apparently reports are that teams are trying to get them to trade their running backs that they have now. So I agree, they are a flawed team, and that's it right there. But the fact that, they have a quote unquote miracle comeback. I mean, what's the old adage? Good teams find a way to win, and that's what they've done. Yeah, they blew out one of the other top teams in the AFC, in the Chargers. Whether it's an emotional win or not against Cleveland, going west to east, whatever, they still absolutely railroaded a very good team in the Chargers. So, I think the Ravens are a good team, and I said it a couple weeks ago, I stand by it. I don't know that they ever won a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson, but they're still a very good team and a team to mess with that's going to be around late in the season, well into the playoffs.
Yeah, but their flaws aren't just their running game. That hurts. Obviously, they're without their top three running backs, but
and they've Marquise Brown has had big time trouble with drops and dropping big passes. So yeah, no, they do have flaws, but that doesn't mean that they can't still be a good team.
For sure, but I think the defense is way more of an issue than anything the offense has done. Marvin Humphrey is supposed to be this lockdown corner, gets undressed yesterday by Ja'Marr Chase. They give up 25 points to a Colts team that wasn't looking very good. Give up 35 to the Chiefs. I think that 41 yesterday. I think the defense is very, very flawed, and that's what's supposed to be the backbone of them is the defense. That's what you already hear. Man, Baltimore's defense with Wink, whatever his name is gonna be able to cover up all the mistakes or whatever. And Marcus Peters is a huge injury that I don't think enough people talked about at the beginning of the season when he tore his ACL and was out. They're like, okay, yeah, they'll be able to put Anthony Avert in there, and he's getting torched out there across there. It's a huge drop from Marcus Peters. And yeah, the defense is going to have, I think, some big, big flaws. And yeah. I just think that they're a more flawed team than what their record has shown from that. And they've probably played more good halves I'd say equally bad halves as they have good halves for the season. And the Bengals, yeah, they're a good team. I do think it's funny how everybody kicks Zach Taylor to the curb. Still, look, their biggest thing is going to be keeping Joe Burrow upright and healthy. And coming up, they got some tough games. They go play the Browns, they go at the Raiders, they host the Chargers, they still have the Chiefs. They still have some tough games left on the schedule, so we'll see what happens there. But they're also, the Bengals defense is underrated. I was saying that Jesse Bates, Jesse Bates and Von Bell, that's a great secondary tandem that people aren't talking about. Like, they have a good secondary that and their defense is pretty underrated, that now people are starting to realize is a pretty, pretty good defense. They did not think about that.
Yeah, no doubt. They, like I said, they're showing up. I guess another big story, the Panthers, they get smacked around by the Giants. Sam Darnold gets benched for PJ Walker, Texas Ranger. Shout out to the Houston Hard Hats, or what were they?
Roughnecks.
Roughnecks, yeah, Roughnecks. So the Giants smack them around. The Patriots, they get a win at home finally against the Jets. Just absolutely undressed the Jets with the running game. But as far if we said this on Wednesday, as far as the college football slate went, the NFL slate wasn't a whole lot better. I know you said we were going to talk about margin of victory, but even so, the closest game, obviously Falcons Dolphins, that's not going to be a game you're locked in for. But everything else was kind of a snooze fest. As far as, you know, fantasy goes, a lot of good players are out. So you're, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel for players to hopefully get you a touchdown or something. But I think F1 picked a great weekend to be in Austin for you to go to. You didn't miss a whole lot of Sunday action.
Yeah, no, there were 11 games. The average margin of victory yesterday was 11. And six games had 20 points worth of victories. That is the most in the last 6 years. So it was a blowout central yesterday. But yeah, no, I even had that hunch. We even said that on Wednesday. That's this NFL slate didn't really look like a good one coming in. It was a blowout. Six victories of 20 points or more. That's pretty alarming. And a lot of the games have been like, we've been lucky with primetime games being close this year. Like,
yeah,
there's been a lot of action at 1 o'clock too, even if it doesn't look like it's going to be a good, like the NFL usually delivers. This year it did not.
Yeah, correct. No, this week, the Thursday night game wasn't too bad. You know, there's a little action there. Sunday night stunk. Who knows? I mean, I don't know. This could be one of the more fascinating games tonight. You know, we talk about Geno Smith versus Jameis Winston. The Seahawks always play close games as it is. You never know what you're going to get out of J-Bo with Jameis. But so that still has, you know, maybe a possibility to put a little bow on this week and, you know, finish up strong. Or it could be blowout city because Geno Smith throws a ton of interceptions or Jameis throws a ton of interceptions. Who knows? It could go one way or the other. You know, one thing I wanted to mention too, I know you said you didn't watch any games, but the Lions yesterday, they're playing the Rams. You're 0-7. The Rams look like, you know, one of the top teams in the NFC, maybe one of the top teams in the NFL. You know, you're going to have to battle, scratch, bite kneecaps to win this game. And that's exactly what they did. I don't know if you saw, they came out after they scored their first touchdown, kick an onside, get it back. They ran a fake punt, got the first down. Like, they were trying everything they could. And when you're 0-17, like the Lions, and you're playing a tough team like the Rams, you know, obviously the Jared Goff, Matt Stafford, double revenge game, that's what you like to see out of a team. You know, it's not just going down without a fight. I know it's the NFL. Everyone's getting paid out there. Everyone's, you know, trying their hardest. You would assume most games week in and week out, but they went out there and tried to scratch and claw every chance they could to get the ball and get a touchdown in or get some points on the board. And I thought that was kind of fun to see and exciting to watch, especially in the red zone.
I'm looking at the drive chart and seeing when they get the ball back with 14 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, down six.
Yeah,
they put up a 15 play drive over 9 minutes.
Yeah,
for 63 yards, and then it ends with the Jared Goff interception at the 12. That is a
heartbreaker.
Yeah, and that's probably pretty much who Jared Goff is. As a Jared Goff defender, but he is struggling. And look, the Lions play hard. Like they
do. DeAndre Swift is good. Like I had DeAndre Swift underrated for how good he's been playing so far this year. Like I always stayed away. You know, nobody cares about your fantasy team, but I always stayed away from Lions running backs. DeAndre Swift is good. Like he can do it all.
3.7 yards a carry is good.
I mean, as far as catching the ball, running the ball.
Well, yeah, he had 96 yards yesterday and he catches. That's a good stat line for a running back.
But he can do both that. He can catch out of the backfield. He can run. He's an every down back. He's good.
Okay. I'm just seeing 13 for 48 at 3.7. That's not great. But.
Yeah, let's just cherry pick stats.
I'm not cherry picking stats. Yesterday.
Go. I'm pretty sure he's at the top of the list for rushing yards on the season.
He's averaging this year. He's 78 carries for 262 yards and 3.4 yards a carry.
He's still good to me. I think he's good. Maybe he's not at the top of the list. But I just look, anytime DeAndre Swift catches my eye, I'm like, fuck, man, that guy's good. I think he's good. So
yeah, because you only see him catching passes. He's got 42 receptions for 391 yards, which is 9.3 an average. And he's just getting a bunch of dump offs from Jared Goff. I love DeAndre Swift at Georgia. He was great, but he's just running. He's a great back for the dump off and run, but running between the tackles, he is struggling.
I still stand by it.
Okay. I'm just giving, Oh, against the Bengals. So 13 for 24, 1.8 yards a carry.
Yeah, that's a good defense. That's a good defense.
Let's see DeAndre Swift's highest rushing. What do you think DeAndre Swift's highest rushing yards this year is?
86 yards.
51.
Oof, tough.
Against the Vikings.
I still stand by it. You know what? I'll take DeAndre Swift. Maybe I look, even if it is, but he can, like I say, he's a guy that can be out there all three downs because he can catch that ball and take little dump offs. He's in the perfect offense.
Yeah, because they're in third and 10 every time because he's getting 1 yard or 2 yards.
He's in the perfect offense for what he, for what his skill set is.
Sure, that's not winning time though. yeah, no, he's great at catching balls out of the backfield. I'm not gonna deny that. And then I think the other big winner, if there was ever a doubt, but the Cowboys on the bye week, you could pretty much just wrap the division title up right now. They're up four games in the loss column on everybody, three in the win column. Mark them into being a top four seed in the NFC this year.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't think there really was a doubt after about week three that they were going to take this thing pretty convincingly. And you definitely don't have to worry about any wild cards coming out of the East. So they'll be the lone dog coming out of the NFC East and see if they can snatch up one of that. You know, right now, obviously, Arizona's got a two-game lead in the win column just because they haven't had their bye yet. But see if Dallas can swoop up that one and only bye week.
Hey, only 24 points allowed for Washington yesterday. Moving in the right direction.
Buddy, they're so bad right now. It's tough. They had four drives within, like, inside Green Bay's. I know they had two drives inside, like, the eight and didn't score. And then they had another two drives inside the 15 and didn't score. So four drives total inside the 15-yard line, not a single point.
Yeah, 0 for 4 in the red zone.
And, that's a week after they had three turnovers against the Chiefs and didn't score a single point. And that's 2 weeks removed from when they played the Saints and had five drives start in Saints territory and didn't score.
I mean, that's on the quarterback.
I think a lot of it is on the quarterback, but there's a lot of, like, play design too, or play call. That's just, they like it. I just feel like they don't design plays to get guys open. Like, it's like, there should be, every play should be, hey, how do we get Terry McLaurin open? He should see 30 targets a game. But although I know that's not realistic, it's like, I feel like it's, there's just the I don't know. It's watching their offense is tough because either our wide receivers just aren't any good, which I don't think that's true. But it just, nobody is ever open. And so, yeah, Taylor Heinicke, has to force some passes. He did have a bad throw against to Adam Humphries yesterday that he left him short and ended up getting picked off in the end zone. But he also makes a lot of plays because nobody's open and is able to. I mean, he rushed for, I think, like 98 yards or something yesterday. He had a ton of rush, 95 yards, had a ton of rushing yards yesterday. Also had two fumbles and one fumble and interception. But like I said, it's just the play call or the scheme. It's just, it's baffling. And I had the inclination that this might happen when Scott Turner came over from Carolina with Ron Rivera. I was like, look, man, it didn't, they had the Christian McCaffrey show. That changes things a lot. Bring Curtis Samuel over. He hasn't been healthy. So it's just, it's tough right now. It's tough going. I'm all in. Let's trade the next three first round picks for Deshaun Watson, get him in here and see what we can do.
What about Tua?
No, you can't. No.
What? So they're going to trade three first round picks for Deshaun Watson and he's never going to play a down for them.
You don't know that.
I mean, he's not playing right now. And then, okay, so they trade, he plays one game this year and then he goes to jail. Or he gets charged with whatever, whatever he's being charged for in Houston. The sexual assault and harassment and all that. And then that's not good. I would say that's par for the course for Washington, though, and it doesn't even sound like he.
That's what I mean.
But it doesn't sound. It doesn't sound like he wants to go to Washington. It sounds like he wants to go to
Miami. He only wants to go to Miami.
Yeah, and now it seems also sounds like he might be interested in going to Carolina, which doesn't make sense. But only Miami.
Nonetheless.
All right. How'd your picks go this week?
College, I went 5-2. And in the NFL, I went 1-3-1.
I had a great weekend. College, 7-1.
Nice.
The only game I lost was Hawaii minus 18.5 at night. And then I'm 4-0 in the NFL this week. I have Seattle plus 5 tonight.
Nice.
So we can another good strong week in the NFL, and we'll see what hopefully the weather in Seattle tonight is supposed to be horrendous. Wind, rain.
I assume like what we saw last night.
Yeah, from what I saw in the highlights, I think we're gonna get some good Jameis clips tonight. So that should be pretty good there. All right, college. Anything catch your mind on college? I did say I did watch Ohio State. I caught the second half of the Bama Tennessee game. I'm still sticking to my stance on Bama. That final score doesn't indicate how close that game was. You see 52-24, you think blowout. That thing was 24-17 in the 31-24. That was not as big a margin of victory as it showed. And their I think the Bama defense is pretty vulnerable still. I'm still on that stance.
So much like you on Sunday, didn't catch any NFL. I did not see any college football. We went hiking early in the morning, and as soon as we were done hiking, went over and started playing golf, then came home and went out to dinner with some friends immediately after. So I was keeping up with some stuff on my phone, obviously made a few bets legally. That's one thing I forgot to mention earlier in the beginning of the show. Obviously, the whole, you know, sports gambling is allowed in Arizona, and it's kind of wild. We're driving, just listening to like the local country station there, and the DJs are talking about, oh, you know, laying this parlay. Hey, you know, if you take this over, use code word, blah, 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 blah. And I just like, it was weird to hear, but it's like, yeah, that's, you know, it's just like anything else now, right? It's like, you know, advertiser marketing for anything else. That was kind of weird. So I had, you know, laid a couple bets down, but I really didn't see a whole lot. I was just keeping up with the things that I bet. Yeah, so I didn't really see a whole lot of what was going on.
They hand out free money on those apps too.
So the very first bet I laid was Chris Paul to get a double-double, and it was odds boosted from like plus 110 to plus 200. And so I was like, yeah, I'm definitely laying that down. And it hit in the first half. So yeah, they literally do give out free money on those things. They gave away like 25% profit on a 5-team parlay for college football. So yeah, they like literally just hand out free money because they're probably making so much.
It's way easier to bet there and make a profit than it is if you're in the offshore or whatever other place.
1,000.
They give you $200 of free bets or whatever. Hit one, mm-hmm. You could bet both sides of the other one. You're both sides of each. You're gonna get one right. They are giving out free. I meant to say that when I was in Tennessee. They did the same thing. They are letting out free money. I don't know what the biggest clunker was. Well, the biggest game or story was the Illinois Penn State game when that went to nine overtimes.
Yeah.
And Penn State just pooping themselves again, like they do to all the time under James Franklin, and killing all the luster out of the Ohio State Penn State. I say that, and now Penn State will win. Or Penn State is going to play well this weekend, but just killing all the momentum from that big game this weekend. But really, college, nothing really.
That OU-Kansas game was a little bit closer.
Oh, yeah. No, that was there. And then Cincinnati had a tough one against Navy. But no, OU getting shut out in the first half against Kansas. Yep. And then having to make some way in the second half there. Yeah, no, that was Kansas always does that, though. There's always one game Kansas has where they keep it close. They beat Texas a couple years, I think like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. That was the one Kansas game. They always keep it close.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, that's imagine having the over in that Penn State Illinois game. That's brutal.
Yeah. But you know, that it goes to a 2-point conversion try after the third over or at the beginning of third overtime, right?
Still, though, I mean, 9 overtimes and you don't hit the over.
Yeah. But the max you can only get is 4 points. in an overtime.
What do you mean?
Starting in the third overtime, it's a one-play, two-point conversion now this year.
Oh, it's not touchdown and then a two-point?
No, it's that's first drive, first overtime. You can kick the extra point or...
yeah, see, I didn't know they changed that. It was always the first... What was it? The first two was a touchdown. Then after that, you had to go for two if you scored a touchdown.
Yes, and then after the LSU A&M game, they said starting in the fifth overtime, you will just make it. You will just go for the 2-point conversion, and you won't play. So you get the ball at the 2-yard line. You run one play, the other. So like penalty style kicks, pretty much with a 2-point conversion. Now they did it where it starts. That starts in the third overtime.
That's
so. Weird. There's only four. Yeah, you think the over can't hit a 9 overtime, but you can only get a maximum of 4 points. And it took until the eighth overtime for a team to even convert the 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why the over never had a chance. When it got to overtime. But this week, look, good slate of games this week. Yeah, Michigan, Michigan State. We got Ohio State, Penn State, Texas and Baylor. I think that's an interesting game. There's a lot more on the docket this weekend. And how about Clemson? Clemson is bad. Clemson is just not good, not a good football team.
Not at all. Yeah, no, that's another tough loss to Pitt, who, you know, Pitt's good. They're not terrible. You know, obviously the Western Michigan loss is still something we forget to talk about. But this is why, you know, everyone talks about the good teams or the blue chips in college football. I can't remember the last time Nick Saban had a season like this, like a 3-loss season. I think they had like a 2-loss season or maybe a 3-loss season like, oh, 9 or something like that. I don't know. But the fact that they are just always in the running for, you know, top team in the nation, it's pretty remarkable for the last, 20 years, something like that, it seems like. But
well, they had a 2-loss season when Tua got hurt, and hurt the second. They got hurt in the second game. I think they had one in 2014. They had it was let me look. Well, they had one in 2010 when they lost 3 games.
Yeah, that was the one
they, they also lost 2 games in 2013, and they lost 2 games in 2014, and they lost 2 games in 2019. Other than that, they won 1 game, but
here we're sitting week 8, and Clemson already has 3 losses on the docket, and probably not the last one.
Yeah, what if they lose this week to Florida State?
I don't see, you know.
Florida State's won 3 in a row, though.
Maybe at Louisville, I could see that, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. They'll lose to Wake.
That'd be tough.
But, we'll see. Yeah. But, yeah, they're in the dumps. And the playoff, still kind of open, still kind of not. We'll see what goes on there. All right, World Series is set. As the Braves against the Astros. We talked about on Wednesday, if the Red Sox were going to keep hitting grand slams, they were probably going to make their way to the World Series. Well, spoiler alert, they stopped hitting grand slams. They also stopped getting guys on base. And they finished with 1 run in their last 26 innings. And they are in Cancun playing golf right now while the Astros are in the World Series. And the Astros also got great starting pitching from Garcia and Valdez in Game 5 and 6. They both had no hitters in through like the first 5 innings. Like they were almost unhittable, but they are on. And I actually think, I know I was excited and I wanted to watch the storyline between the Dodgers and Astros with whole cheating, blah blah blah. That's all that stuff would have been great, but the Braves have good starting pitching, and I think the Braves can go toe to toe. The offense is good. Eddie Rosario
just lights out,
unbelievable. Couldn't hit a lick until the back half of September this year. unbelievable. But I think this is going to be a good series.
I think so, too. So this is part of my my jinx that I mentioned at the top of the show. When the playoffs started, I said, Rays Giants. Let's see it. Rays Giants in the World Series. Well, they both ended up losing. And then the way I saw the Red Sox playing, I was like, oh, Red Sox are going to win it all. They just have that team of destiny feel. They're going to win the World Series. Well, they're gone. So now the Astros are going to win the World Series. I see it right now. The way Yordan Alvarez is swinging the bat, Correa, right now Altuve, all he does is just hit bombs. He's like 3 for 25, but he's got two bombs and like a double or something like that. So he's rolling, obviously. So here we go. The Astros are going to win the World Series. Wink, wink.
Yes, but what happens when they actually do win the World Series?
Well, then I called it the whole time.
Okay. The Astros pitching, though, was
very good.
Was very good in the last two games when they needed it to be. The bullpen pretty good, but like
the grand slams were a problem. I think I'll admit
the grand slams were a big problem. I still think their rotation could have some issues. I know I just praised how well they were playing, but they can run into some problems, I think, if things get a little sideways. But I don't know. Did you see the latest cheating allegation from them?
No.
How they're whistling now? Still, I think that was still said, but now they're whistling before a curveball or off-speed pitch comes in, and they're just smashing it. They were even doing that at Fenway on one, the Alvarez home run to left. He was like, had a grin going around third base when he heard a whistle right before it. You could hear the whistle pretty good too. But it hasn't caught the steam that's been out there as the other ones.
Yeah, no, I didn't catch that.
But we'll have to see what is going on there. All right, do you have anything else here before we wrap up?
I think that'll do it for me on this side.
All right, that's all I got here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back on Thursday with some picks. Have a good week.